Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, July 26th, 2020. I'm reading on Thursday, July 30th. The first stories we'll be reading are the most recent stories that were published today, and then we will go back and read stories further into the week. July 30th, San Angelo and Tom Green County report 44 new COVID-19 cases, 53 in hospital. July 30th, Tom Green County, 2,175 positive cases reported, 44 new positive cases, 23 deaths in Tom Green County, 16 county residents, 7 out-of-county residents. 53 currently hospitalized. News organizations sued Texas for nursing home COVID numbers. San Angelo has up to 68. By John Tufts of the San Angelo Standard Times and Julie Chang of the Austin American Statesman. Up to 35 employees and 33 nursing care residents have tested positive for COVID-19 in San Angelo, according to a recent report issued by Texas Health and Human Services. News organizations had to sue to get the information. Earlier this week, state officials released the names of all Texas nursing homes and assisted living centers who have self-reported outbreaks of coronavirus. A cumulative total of 2,830 nursing and assisted living facility employees and 9,598 residents have tested positive as of July 15, 2020, according to the report. Various news organizations requested the information months ago under the Texas Public Information Act. Texas Health and Human Services sought to withhold the records, citing privacy reasons. The Texas Attorney General's Office, which reviews such cases, ruled earlier this month that case counts are not medical records and must be disclosed. Nursing care facilities in San Angelo with COVID listed in report. These were 8 nursing care and assisted living facilities listed in the report released by the state. They include 1. Arbor Terrace Health Care Center, 0 employees, 2 residents. 2. Cedar Manor Nursing and Rehabilitation, 3 employees, 3 residents. 3. Meadow Creek Nursing and Rehabilitation, 0 employees, 0 residents. 4. Park Plaza Limited Partners Incorporated, 2 employees, 0 residents. 5. Regency House, 23 employees, 26 residents. 6. Sage Crest Alzheimer's Care Center, 3 employees, 2 residents. 7. San Angelo Nursing and Rehab, 4 employees, 0 residents. 8. Shannon Medical Center, 0 employees, 0 residents. The report listed one person who died due to COVID-19 as a resident of Regency House. Earlier in July, a Regency House spokesperson confirmed the senior care facility had dozens of cases and residents were being kept in an isolation wing after displaying symptoms of COVID-19. Other area senior care facilities who have announced positive cases not listed in the report include Baptist Retirement Community, Lindale Senior Living Facility, and the Reagan County Care Center at its Big Lake facility. Texas Health and Human Services plans to release new data every business day, but the data will be from 2 weeks prior to allow officials to review the information. Today's COVID-19 data for long-term care facilities are current as of July 14th. HHSC has a legal and ethical obligation to protect the private health information of everyone we serve, both in the private facilities we regulate and those we operate, Phil Wilson, Acting Health and Human Services Executive Commissioner, said in a news release. We appreciate the guidance from the Attorney General of Texas, which allows us to release this additional data while maintaining important personal privacy protections. Although all nursing facilities have been on lockdown, with visitors barred and staff screened for the disease since March, coronavirus crept into some facilities. About 30% of Central Texas's long-term care facilities had at least one case of COVID-19, according to a story by the Austin American-Statesman. Texas officials did not release the number of employee deaths. Affidavit states San Angelo man hit woman with sheathed machete multiple times during fight, by Elena Edgen. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a woman left her residence the morning after she was assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit. On Wednesday, July 29th, a woman told police she had been assaulted in the 700 block of Parsons Street during an argument with a man who also resides at the residence. Though the argument happened on Tuesday, she could not leave the residence earlier due to safety concerns, records state. The woman stated she and the man had an argument Tuesday night when the man hit her head with a sheathed machete multiple times. Officers noticed bleeding on the side of her head and swelling, consistent with a blunted-edged object, according to the affidavit. The man told officers he did not assault her, but they did have an argument and a sheathed. He also stated no one else was in the residence at the time, according to the affidavit. Abelardo Fuentes III, 29, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $30,000 bond as of 11:30 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Affidavit states San Angelo man threatened, shot teen not to cooperate after other man shot her, by Elena Edgen. An arrest affidavit has detailed what led to a teen being shot at Ben Ficklin Reservoir and later threatened. About 5 p.m. Friday, July 26th, the San Angelo police arrived at the Community Medical Center in response to the report of a shooting victim. A 15-year-old girl had been shot in the left tibia, which damaged an artery, according to the affidavit. She was transported to the University Medical Center in Lubbock and was in stable condition, according to a police news release. The girl told officers a man shot her, possibly due to an earlier altercation where he showed a weapon and threatened to shoot her, records state. Several witnesses told police the man had a black handgun at the reservoir that day. One witness stated the gun was a black Glock 43 with 9mm rounds. Officers found 9mm round shell casings scattered on the ground at the reservoir, according to the affidavit. Police found the man, who tested positive for gunshot residue. Two witnesses also told police they heard another man, also 18, threaten to harm the girl for cooperating with SAPD, according to an arrest affidavit. Isaiah Jeremiah Lopez and Joel Angel Garcia, both 18, were arrested Friday and booked into Tom Green County Jail. Lopez was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Garcia was arrested on suspicion of retaliation and possessing less than 2 ounces of marijuana. As of 3:30 p.m. Wednesday, Lopez remained in lieu of a $30,000 bond. Garcia was released from jail on an $11,000 bond Saturday, according to online jail records. Break-in costs Angelo Civic Theater more than $5,000 in stolen items. How you can help, by Elena Edgen. A spokesperson with San Angelo's oldest theater said their building was broken into Friday, leaving damages and more than $5,000 worth of lost equipment and tools. Angelo Civic Theater can trace its historic roots past two world wars. At about 7:30 a.m. Friday, July 24th, four people were seen on surveillance footage removing items from the building at 1936 Sherwood Way. Video shows people who entered through the box office's sliding glass window before stealing items and destroying the area, according to Brent Jenkins, artistic director for the theater. Jenkins discovered the damage and called police, who investigated the area and reviewed surveillance videos. Footage showed four people, three wearing masks and gloves, who appear to enter an unlocked front door before forcing their way into the box office. Footage showed one person who picked up a 4-pound hammer ACT had purchased to make recent updates, who then swung the hammer to break a lock on a closet door. Jenkins said more than $100 was taken, money that ACT had earned from its last show in February before it had to close due to the coronavirus. They trashed the box office looking for more, but there wasn't anything of any value really for them to take, Jenkins said. Then they left by opening the bottom half of the box office door. I guess they couldn't figure out how the whole door works. Jenkins said the group also damaged his office and took $20 from an old cash box, as well as a leather satchel and an electric and acoustic guitar from the booth. Next, they went to the shop where we build sets, and that's where most of the items were stolen, Jenkins said. Jenkins said missing items included air compressors, a welder, several hand tools, chop and circular saws, screw guns, batteries, and chargers. The total value of the lost goods and equipment is estimated at more than $5,500. ACT has been closed due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Officials said the theater has no income and insurance will not cover all of the losses, so ACT has created a GoFundMe. The theft happened at the worst possible time, Jenkins said. The outpouring of donations and love we've already seen is incredible and helps renew our faith that this old theater is worth saving and keeping whole. It is true we feel less safe here now, but the community love is good medicine for our souls, he said. Those who wish to help ACT can donate money through GoFundMe. Officials with ACT also encourage people to donate their time helping staff complete projects around the building. For more information, email angelocivictheater@gmail.com. Affidavit states, Carlsbad man left numerous bruises on three-year-old, claims child caused the injuries. By Elena Edgen. A Carlsbad man has been arrested after a mother picked up her three-year-old child and found the child covered in bruises, according to an arrest affidavit. On July 6th, Tom Green County deputies met with the mother, who told them she picked up her three-year-old child from a male relative. The child had been with the man for a few weeks for visitation, according to the affidavit. When the mother picked up the child, she noticed bruises on their forehead, cheeks, back, and leg. She told officers the man told her he had struck the child's inner thigh because the child had an accident, records state. The man also told the mother the child caused the injuries to get him in trouble and called the child an expletive, according to the affidavit. A belt likely caused the bruise on the inner thigh, according to the affidavit. The child was taken to the hospital, and staff determined the child had bruises on the right anterior thigh, right and left facial cheek, forehead, and lower back. An investigator also noticed a series of tooth-sized bruises on the inside of the child's bottom lip, records state. The investigator determined this type of bruising is caused by getting struck in the mouth by an object. The affidavit did not identify the object. Adam Ross Hamilton, 29, was arrested Thursday, July 23rd, on suspicion of bodily injury to a child. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center the following day on a $10,000 bond, according to online jail records. Bodily injury to a child is a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 10 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Crab King's food truck having grand opening in San Angelo, by Rosanna Aguilera. Crab King's, a fast casual restaurant that specializes in Florida-style seafood, is set to open in San Angelo this week. According to a Facebook post from the restaurant, the wait is over for San Angelo. This will be a soft opening, as we are making preparations for something big, according to the post. Trust me, you don't want to miss this. The food truck will be at 2626 Sherwood Way in the Bratton's parking lot for to-go orders only. The truck will be open from 12 to 9 p.m. or until sold out from Friday through Sunday. Crab King also has restaurants in other Texas cities, including Abilene, San Antonio, El Paso, Elgin, and Austin. Fort Concho hosts American Plains Art Show through August 2nd, by Rosanna Aguilera. More than 100 artworks from around the country are on display at Fort Concho during the annual American Plains Artists Association show. This year's show features artists from 18 states, covering many classic Western themes of the American Plains region, according to a news release. Subjects include cowboys and Native Americans, ranching and farming, mountains and prairies, sunny skies, storm clouds, stagecoaches, gamblers, a wide array of buffalo, horses, deer, cattle, and many smaller animals that populate regions of the Western Plains. The paintings and sculptures showcased are for sale, with proceeds benefiting the artists, the American Plains Artists, and Fort Concho. Learn more online at AmericanPlainsArtists.com and FortConcho.com. If you go, American Plains Artists Show and Sale at Fort Concho Quartermaster Galleries, located near Flipper and Burgess Streets, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesdays through Saturdays, 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Sundays. Show ends August 2nd. Cost is free to view. Art prices vary. Guests are encouraged to wear masks and follow COVID-19 prevention guidelines. Found unsolicited seeds from China in the mail? Do not plant them, officials warn. By Elena Edgen. Update. This article was updated July 28th with information from the USDA. Texas residents have reported receiving packages of seeds labeled as jewelry from China, a potential agricultural scam that has cropped up in several states, according to a news release from Sid Miller, Texas Agriculture Commissioner. Miller is urging Texas not to plant these seeds as they could contain harmful invasive species or be otherwise unsafe, according to the release. An invasive plant species might not sound threatening, but these small invaders could destroy Texas agriculture, Miller said in the release. Texas Department of Agriculture has been working closely with USDA to analyze these unknown seeds so we can protect Texas residents. Invasive species are organisms not native to a certain region. The introduction of invasive species could cause the destruction of native crops, introduce diseases to native plants, and could be dangerous to livestock. The USDA urged anyone who receives an unsolicited package of seeds to immediately contact their state plant regulatory official, which, in Texas, is the state's Department of Agriculture. The USDA asks people to keep the seeds and packaging, including the mailing label, until the information can be given to authorities. The USDA said it appears the seeds are part of a brushing scam, where people receive unsolicited items from a seller who then posts false customer reviews to boost sales. USDA is currently collecting seed packages from recipients and will test their contents and determine if they contain anything that could be of concern to U.S. agriculture or the environment. If someone receives unsolicited foreign seeds in the mail, do not open or plant them. Keep the contents sealed and report it to sitc.mail@aphis.usda.gov or call 800-877-3835. Affidavit states, quote, it had to be done. San Angelo suspect told witness after a man's fatal beating. By Elena Edgen. An arrest affidavit has detailed what happened before the beating of a 48-year-old San Angelo man and his death nearly 2 weeks later. On July 3rd, police responded to the call of a possible aggravated assault in the 800 block of Antonio Street. The fire department had been called in for a medical incident at the same address and were the first at the location, records state. The fire department discovered Victor Mancha Rodriguez, 48, unconscious and unresponsive in a pool of blood in a back bedroom. He was taken to Shannon Medical Center's intensive care unit, but died from his injuries July 14th. Rodriguez had skull and facial fractures and a laceration several inches long, cutting diagonally from the left of his upper scalp to the center of his forehead, according to the affidavit. The affidavit didn't include details about whether a weapon was used in the fatal assault. Investigators noticed a large amount of drying blood between the foot of the bed and dressers and cabinets in the room, according to the affidavit. There was more blood on a television on top of a table. The bedroom was undisturbed, excluding where Rodriguez was, which led officers to believe there was no struggle. A medical examiner later told investigators Rodriguez had no defensive wounds, records state. Witness described man as acting strangely before killing. Investigators interviewed several men who were at the residence around the time of the beating. One man found Rodriguez in the bedroom and called 911, records state. Another man told police himself Rodriguez and three other men were at the house during the evening before the beating. About 1:25 a.m., he told officers he left the residence to get water, at which time only Rodriguez and Kevin Lee Barron were at the house. The man stated when he returned, another man was at the residence and asked what happened to Rodriguez, records state. That witness told investigators he arrived at the house about 3 a.m. and heard moaning coming from the back bedroom. One witness told officers they went to the bedroom and heard Rodriguez moaning, according to the affidavit. After Rodriguez was found, witnesses noticed Barron leaving the backyard. One witness approached Barron and asked what happened, and Barron replied something to effect of, "It had to be done," according to the affidavit. Witnesses noted Barron was excited and sweating profusely at the time. Another man who was at the house the evening before Rodriguez was beaten spoke with Barron and told investigators Barron seemed to be acting strangely, very excited, as if he wanted to fight someone, according to the affidavit. Barron was arrested on Wednesday, July 22nd, on suspicion of unauthorized use of a vehicle, unrelated to Rodriguez's death. 2 days later, he was charged on suspicion of murder. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $507,500 bond as of 2:30 p.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Affidavit states Fort Stockton man stabbed someone in abdomen in San Angelo, then fled, by Elena Edgen. A Fort Stockton man has been arrested after police found a man with multiple stab wounds in San Angelo, according to an arrest affidavit. On Friday, July 24th, police responded to the report of a stabbing in the 1100 block of Linda Lee Drive. A man was found with stab wounds to the right side of his abdomen, near the lower part of the rib cage, according to the affidavit. He was treated at the scene and released, according to Tracy Piet Fox, public information officer with the San Angelo Police Department. Officers discovered the suspect had fled and found him hiding nearby, records state. Fernando Jacobo Tafoya, 35, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Jail in lieu of a $25,000 bond as of 10:45 a.m. Monday, July 27th, according to online jail records. Indictment. San Angelo landscaper indicted in theft, jumping bail, ran oil field scam in 2012. By Elena Edgen. A San Angelo landscaper has been indicted for jumping bond and jailed for the third time in 2020 after a Better Business Bureau investigation discovered unfinished jobs, according to court documents. Michael Eugene LaFoy, 49, is facing two felony charges in Tom Green County. In 2019, a BBB investigation revealed LaFoy had taken money without finishing jobs. About 8 months later, in July 2020, LaFoy was indicted on jumping bail. On July 14th, he was booked into the Tom Green County Jail on the indicted charge and five warrants. He remained in jail in lieu of a $15,000 bond. The bail jumping charge has been enhanced to a second-degree felony, punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. He has also been indicted on theft of property between $1,500 and $30,000, a state jail felony punishable by up to 2 years. A plea hearing has been tentatively set for 10:30 a.m. August 6th in the 51st District Court, according to online jail records. The State of Texas versus Michael Eugene LaFoy. On July 2nd, 2019, LaFoy received a $3,000 check from a company in advance for home repair services on a building in the 1900 block of West Tuig Avenue. He agreed to do the repairs and cashed the check, but never completed the work, records state. Investigators determined LaFoy knew the work wasn't done and that he owed the company money, but he had not returned the money or completed the work by November 19th. The BBB reported LaFoy working under Ram Services, would go door to door collecting money and promising to trim trees, clean the property, and lay sod. He would not return to do the work, the report stated. The BBB encouraged customers to file complaints with them or contact the police, according to the report. Complaints on the Bureau's page date back to 2017, showing a pattern of failing to complete work. LaFoy was arrested November 21, 2019, on suspicion of theft of property between $1,500 and $30,000. He was released from Tom Green County Jail on a $15,000 bond the following day. On January 9, 2020, he was indicted on the same charge. On March 18, LaFoy returned to jail on suspicion of two counts of property theft out of Midland County. He was released 2 days later on a $1,000 bond. About a week later, on March 27, LaFoy was booked into jail again on suspicion of theft of property between $100 and $750 by check and released later that day on a $500 bond. LaFoy previously sentenced in FBI investigation. In February 2012, the former Midland resident found his way onto the FBI's radar after they discovered a wire fraud scheme concerning a non-existent oil field pipeline, according to an FBI report. The report also shows this was not the first time. LaFoy admitted that while he operated as LaFoy Pipe, he agreed to sell $155,000 of 4.5-inch oil field pipe to Arvine Pipe and Supply in Norman, Oklahoma. The Oklahoma company sent the money via wire transfer, but never received the pipe, according to the FBI report. LaFoy told the court that when he negotiated the sale, he knew he could not deliver. When Arvine complained, he sent emails promising delivery was imminent, according to the report. On October 25, 2012, LaFoy pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 37 months in federal prison to be followed by 3 years supervised release. He also had to pay $407,000 restitution to Arvine, Brandvik Pipe and Equipment of Borger, Texas, Tycoon Operating of Plano, Texas, and May Oilfield Pipe of Overton, Texas. These companies were defrauded by LaFoy in a similar way. Records show that LaFoy was also sentenced in 2005 for wire fraud in the Midland-Odessa area. Deputies say man stole over $77,000 of items across Tom Green County and state lines, by Elena Edgen. A man has warrants for his arrest after investigators found stolen equipment, including a tractor and a water hauler, according to a news release from the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office. On Tuesday, July 21st, investigators with the sheriff's office were working on a theft case when they discovered $77,200 of stolen items from the county, San Antonio, and Oklahoma, according to the release. The items included a 2013 Titol semi-trailer water hauler reported stolen in San Antonio, a 2007 Honda 200 dirt bike reported stolen in Oklahoma, a 2007 Kubota L84 tractor with assorted funeral equipment reported stolen in Tom Green County. A 1999 Ford F-350 reported stolen in Tom Green County. A 2020 Jayco J-Flight 264 travel trailer reported stolen in Tom Green County. Investigators also discovered service meters at the location had been intentionally damaged to illegally receive power and water, according to the release. The sheriff's office is searching for Lonnie Ray Wooten, 41, on warrants for criminal mischief, impairing public service, under $30,000, and theft of property between $30,000 and $150,000. Additional charges are expected, according to the release. If anyone has information on Wooten, contact the sheriff's office at 325-655-8111 or via email at tgsotipline@co.tom-green.tx.us. San Angelo on list of best cities in the South to Live After the COVID-19 Pandemic by Rosanna Aguilera. San Angelo is found on a list of best cities in the South to live after the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the Business Insider. The 19 best cities in the South to live in after the coronavirus pandemic article from the Business Insider has San Angelo sitting at number 17. If you are considering moving to the southern region of the U.S., you may want to consider one of these cities that have plenty of opportunities to work from home and low living costs, the article states. San Angelo is one of the three Texas cities on the list, including Wichita Falls and College Station. San Angelo's population density of 34.9 is the smallest population density among metro areas in the South, according to the article. This city also has the second shortest weekly commute among metro areas in this region, at 2 hours and 53 minutes. To create the list, Business Insider used a variety of metrics from government and academic data sets. This includes looking at the share of jobs that can potentially be done remotely, the pre-coronavirus unemployment rate, and housing costs. After we collected all our data, we rescaled our figures to a uniform Z-score so that we could then calculate an overall score for each metro area, according to the article. After finding our overall best cities, we decided to focus on metros in the South, as defined by the Census Bureau. Most of the data came from before the pandemic, and the economic fallout from the current situation could have effects on different cities. For instance, the large number of job losses and spike in unemployment during the pandemic may have affected some of these cities more than others, the article states. San Angelo on list of best cities in the South to live after the COVID-19 pandemic by Rosanna Aguilera. San Angelo is found on a list of best cities in the South to live after the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the Business Insider. The 19 best cities in the South to live in after the coronavirus pandemic article from the Business Insider has San Angelo sitting at number 17. If you are considering moving to the southern region of the U.S., you may want to consider one of these cities that have plenty of opportunities to work from home and low living costs, the article states. San Angelo is one of the three Texas cities on the list, including Wichita Falls and College Station. San Angelo's population density of 34.9 is the smallest population density among metro areas in the South, according to the article. This city also has the second shortest weekly commute among metro areas in this region, at 2 hours and 53 minutes. To create the list, Business Insider used a variety of metrics from government and academic data sets. This includes looking at the share of jobs that can potentially be done remotely, the pre-coronavirus unemployment rate, and housing costs. After we collected all our data, we rescaled our figures to a uniform Z-score so that we could then calculate an overall score for each metro area, according to the article. After finding our overall best cities, we decided to focus on metros in the South, as defined by the Census Bureau. Most of the data came from before the pandemic, and the economic fallout from the current situation could have effects on different cities. For instance, the large number of job losses and spike in unemployment during the pandemic may have affected some of these cities more than others, the article states. COVID-19 is hitting small town life in Crockett County where it hurts the most, by John Tufts. Ozona. Beneath the shady canopy of trees in the town square of Ozona, Texas, is a statue dedicated to the early pioneers of Crockett County. Three bronze pilgrims, a father, mother, and child, embrace as they gaze onto present-day Ozona. A metal plaque below reads, "The Tie That Binds." Lately, the tie binding everyone in this small, rural West Texas town of roughly 3,500 residents has been COVID-19. When the virus first spread across the nation, Crockett County remained relatively unscathed. It reported zero cases in March, April, and May. Ozona residents said they were wary but felt mostly safe. Hardly anyone wore a mask. Then on June 4th, Crockett County had its first case of COVID-19, a man in his 40s who tested positive in San Angelo. The cause was listed as community spread. 3 days later, a teenage male tested positive. By the end of the month, there were at least a dozen cases. The pandemic has hammered Ozona ever since. Ozona resident says virus will find you. As of Friday, July 24th, up to 136 Crockett County residents had tested positive for the coronavirus, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. Ozona United Methodist Church pastor Lee Lloyd described COVID-19 as an invisible monster that sneaked into their community and is hunting people down. "We don't know how it got into Ozona, but the reality is that this virus is here. It's out there," Lloyd said. "A lot of times, no matter how careful you are, you will catch it. It will find you." Lloyd's fears are supported by data, which show Crockett County's positive cases matching areas more than 13 times its population size. As of Friday, July 24th, San Jacinto County had reported 135 positive cases and 2 deaths from COVID-19. Its population is nearly 29,000 people. Kendall County has reported 137 positive cases and 0 deaths. Its county population is more than 47,000 people, according to state data. Population sizes that do match Crockett County include Baylor, Coke, and Upton. There are 50 cases of COVID-19 between the 3 counties. The explosion of COVID-19 has changed life in Ozona, leaving many to wonder when or if things will ever get back to normal. "We were one of the last counties in the state to even have a case," said Crockett County Judge Fred Deaton. "We had a rapid rise, and it mainly started in our care center. We're not sure what's causing it." Deaton, who was under quarantine for the virus himself on July 20th, recently used his emergency powers to shut down the Crockett County swimming pool, local fitness and wellness center, as well as the public library. Deaton said these facilities will remain closed until further notice. "We really didn't know what our situation was for a while," Deaton said. "Thankfully, the numbers are starting to go down. Our EMS coordinator made a deal with the Texas Tech Medical School that if we ran tests to them, they'd get us results within 24 hours. Deaton said private businesses are allowed to operate under orders set by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a position supported by the Crockett County Commissioner's Court. But by about 1:30 p.m. July 21st, at least half a dozen restaurants and other local businesses appeared to be closed. "It's because of coronavirus," said a local Subway employee. "Some people here just don't want to take the risk." COVID-19 hits rural communities like Ozona where it hurts the most. The fear of going out, of not able to spend time with friends and family, cuts to the heart of what makes living in places like Ozona worthwhile. "We're a small community," said Melissa Perner, the editor, owner, and publisher of the Ozona Stockman, a weekly newspaper for the Crockett County area. "We like to get out and socialize." For many like Perner, Ozona is as small a town as small-town rural America gets, both in size and charm. People greet each other by their first names on the street, as well as in the grocery store, of which Ozona has one, and one general store, one hardware store, and one post office. "We're a community where you have to go to the post office to get your mail. We don't have home delivery," Perner said. "We like to be social, and we're a community that travels. If you need to go to Walmart or HEB or to visit your doctor, you go to San Angelo." Perner suspects this is how COVID may have entered Ozona. "I think when San Angelo closed and Del Rio closed and everything else closed, we closed too," Perner said. "Well, as things started opening back up, people were tired of being inside. People were tired of being shut down. So people started going to these places that had reopened. I don't know if that's why our cases skyrocketed, but we had our first case on June 4th, and now we have 136. It's just crazy," she said. "I've lived in Ozona about 14 years. This has been the craziest year I've lived here, ever, because of COVID." Other residents share Perner's thoughts. "Death and dying in Ozona has changed. I've never seen anything like it. Said Bruce Kerbo, "We had the AIDS scare, the swine flu, and SARS, but this is something else. We've already had as many funerals this year so far in Ozona as we usually have all year." Kerbo has owned and operated a funeral home in Ozona for 45 years. Crockett County has reported one fatality due to COVID-19 as of July 24th, according to state data. But Kerbo is confident the number of fatalities in Ozona is higher. "We've had at least 4 deaths from it, and in Crockett County, we have about 3,500 people. We lose maybe 1% of our population a year. We've already had 30 funerals. It's hit us hard." Part of the reason this small community was stricken so quickly and so harshly, Kerbo surmised, is because of constantly shifting information that comes with a novel virus like COVID-19. "When this thing first started, people didn't know what information they could rely on," Kerbo said. "They said when the summer came, it would kill it. It didn't. Hydrochloroquine didn't kill it. The masks weren't necessary, then they were. We've started taking it seriously. Just about everyone wears a mask now." Speaking as a funeral director, Kerbo said what hurts the most is seeing how COVID-19 has prevented people from seeking comfort in one another when mourning the dead. "The government is restricting funerals and graveside services to no more than groups of 10, and people have to maintain their distance," Kerbo said. "It's a pretty sad situation when you can't go and honor your loved ones. It's difficult on families." It's difficult for Kerbo, too. State guidelines have changed how people are able to grieve. "It's hard to tell people that when they've just lost their mother," Kerbo said. "It just hurts me to see that they can't have contact with their loved ones." That lack of connection in death is often a continuation of the disconnect COVID-19 forces into life. The care center has been locked down for months. Husbands and wives and children haven't been able to hold their family member's hand when they pass, Kerbo said. "There's a helplessness there. They can't hold on to people they love." On April 4th, Pastor Lloyd traveled from Ozona to preach at her father-in-law's funeral. "It was hard," Lloyd said. "There were no more than 10 people who could be in the chapel. But the hardest part was that my mother-in-law didn't understand why she couldn't hug people." Texas has reported 4,885 fatalities due to COVID-19 as of Friday, July 25th, according to tracking data maintained by the state. Ozona keeps the faith. Lloyd has been the pastor of Ozona United Methodist Church for the past 3 years. The past 3 months have been like nothing she's experienced in her 20 years serving in the ministry. "In March, after spring break, we had to stop holding services in the church because we just didn't know enough about what this virus was doing," Lloyd said. "To reach people now, I've had to get creative." Lloyd has used text messaging, phone calls, emails, online video conferencing, and other means to reach her congregation. To encourage families to practice their faith in their own homes, Sunday school teachers prepare lesson packets and deliver them. Some family projects have included building an altar outside, as they would have done during the days of the Old Testament. "People miss being together," she said. "I hear all the time, when are we going to get together? When are we going to get together Sunday?" On any given Sunday, about 20 to 35 people now sit outside under the shade of the church's red oak trees to listen as Lloyd delivers her sermons using an amplifier. Moving forward in Ozona will take more than masks. Attending church services is one way Ozona residents have reclaimed some degree of normalcy. Officials say the rest will come with personal responsibility. "I believe if everyone will do what the government and doctors have asked us to do, wearing masks, social distancing, I believe that our numbers will go down, but it will take all of us working together to do that," Judge Deaton said. Ozona resident Larry Williams is 72. The coronavirus isn't the first worldwide pandemic he's lived through. "My brother got polio when he was 7 years old," Williams said. "I got the polio vaccine when I was 4. What would I tell younger folks about COVID? Just hang on. There will be something else coming next. You've got to be patient and deal with it. Lifelong resident Olivia Rico works at the Triple C hardware store in Ozona and believes her community will be stronger as a result of the coronavirus. Ozona is a place where we support each other. We all come together in times of need. COVID has brought us all closer together, even as we're having to stay apart, Rico said. We are not all in the same boat, says Ozona Chamber official. The phrase, we're all in the same boat, is one that rankles Shannon Biggerstaff, president of the Ozona Chamber of Commerce. We are not all in the same boat. Not if you're a small business owner, Biggerstaff said. Our local businesses are doing the best they can, but we're an interstate community that relies on traffic, and traffic is down. Biggerstaff has lived in Ozona for 20 years and said rural communities along the interstate are feeling the trickle-down effects from larger metropolitan areas who have canceled events, closed their doors, or shuttered theme parks. She advocates that businesses be allowed to reopen and for people to exercise personal responsibility and reasonable precautions. Businesses are not going to be able to survive if we keep shutting things down, Biggerstaff said. I think what needs to happen is that things need to open up and people need to take care and take precautions. Whether you're dealing with COVID or the flu, if you're in a risky situation and you don't want to go to a restaurant, don't go. Biggerstaff believes a misconception most people have is that small businesses will be able to survive indefinitely with federal funding. Federal funding is limited, and most people don't understand what the overhead costs are to run an operation. The loss of perishable items, paying for health care. When you go to a restaurant to have lunch, it takes a lot to keep those doors open. Biggerstaff worries about COVID-19 restrictions and how they impact small businesses in a town existing mostly on small businesses. We need to be responsible with COVID, but whenever there's an increase, we need to look at what's happening behind these case numbers too, Biggerstaff said. We need to focus on recoveries. People want to go back to a normal life, and this is not normal. Out of the 375,846 positive coronavirus cases in Texas, an estimated 221,510 people have recovered as of July 24th. The tie that binds in Crockett County. Outside the wooden double doors of the Ozona United Methodist Church is a cross made from two stout tree branches wrapped in chicken wire. Tied around the chicken wire are strips of brightly colored fabric. Normally, the cross is placed in the church sanctuary on Palm Sunday, allowing parishioners to decorate it with palm leaves and then with flowers on Easter. But Palm Sunday was canceled by COVID-19 this year. When it came to take the cross back inside the Sunday after Easter, I just couldn't do it, Lloyd said. I felt people needed a place where they could come to the church to share their concerns, their anger, and their frustrations, as well as their joys with God in a visible way. That's what we do when we come to church. We share those with each other. Lloyd cut strips of cloth and put up a sign near the cross reading, "This cross marks sacred space. Tie a piece of cloth or ribbon on the cross to represent your prayers, serving as a silent, visual reminder that we as a community share burdens, celebrations, and hopes with each other, especially during these uncertain times." After 4 weeks, Lloyd had to turn the cross around. One side had been covered in bright fabric and ribbons representing Ozona's prayers, its heartache, and its messages of hope in a world overrun by a viral pandemic. The ties that bind, all billowing together softly in the wind. San Angelo adding second Kentucky Fried Chicken, this time in Lakeview area, by Rosanna Aguilera. San Angelo is adding a second Kentucky Fried Chicken, this time in the Lakeview area. The new restaurant will be at 378 West 14th, according to the City of San Angelo's monthly building report for June 2020. The commercial project is pending with a budget of $561,000. The other Kentucky Fried Chicken stop is at 1801 South Bryant Boulevard. KFC once had several locations in San Angelo and was among the first franchises to open here. The first one opened in 1965 by Jack Swanson. And on the same page as the KFC story, there is a link to an earlier story from the San Angelo Standard Times that's related. And for fun, we're going to read that today as we have time. Fast food craze made big waves in San Angelo in 1969. Throwback Thursday by Matthew McDaniel. Published August 22, 2019. Convenience dining had quite the heyday in San Angelo back in August 1969, according to a Standard Times article on the subject under the headline, Fast Food Franchises Hit Angelo. Staff writer Grady Hill talked about the eating establishments in town and remarked that dining habits changed drastically during the war years with folks eating at home, and many hotel restaurants and confectionaries had closed by the end of the 1940s. The same was true across America, and by the mid-1950s, fast food franchises were born and began to spread like wildfire across the nation. For folks in a hurry, fast food looked pretty attractive, and in San Angelo, pizza and fried chicken paved the way. By the late 1960s, you could choose from franchises including Shakey's Pizza Parlor, Kentucky Fried Chicken at two locations, Church's Fried Chicken, and Miss Alma's Ozark Fried Chicken, too. According to the report, a dozen other franchised and chain restaurants had opened, were building, or had plans to build in town. The Derwiener Schnitzel at 3205 Sherwood Way, which was opened for business on August 23, 1968, by George W. Draper, Jr., was doing steady business by this time. Other outlets mentioned as early arrivals were Burger Chef, two Quick Chick outlets, and two Dairy Queen restaurants. The article mentions that there were about 3,800 Dairy Queen restaurants nationwide at that time. The local stores had been managed by retired Air Force Major Thomas Garrett since opening in 1968, and by late 1973, there were eight DQ restaurants in town with plans to add more. The first McDonald's in town was nearing completion in August 1969, located at 2902 Sherwood Way. The article mentions that the company posted sales of $208 million for the first half of 1969. Another quick cuisine offering that was catching on was fast Mexican food. At the time of the article, Taco Bell offered patio and dining room meals at 3336 Sherwood Way, and a taco box was being completed at Avenue Inn in Jackson Street. The Baskin-Robbins Ice Cream Parlor was nearing completion on Sherwood Way at that time as well. Hundreds Turn Out to Support Police Officers by Colin Murphy. Hundreds of people showed up Saturday in San Angelo to participate in the Back the Blue Walk in a show of support for law enforcement officers. Weeks of turmoil across the country in the wake of the death of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota, led to calls from many activists to reform and, in some cases, to defund police departments. Saturday's event was meant to send a message of support to law enforcement. David Nowlin, who led the march, said he was happy with the amount of people who turned out to demonstrate support from the local community for police. "I'm thrilled. At 8:30 a.m., people started to show up. We love and support our police officers and law and order. We need law and order. They are doing a good job. I want to say thank you to the San Angelo Police Department. They've done a good job for us, and we appreciate everything they do." Three people killed in Comanche County, from staff reports. Three people are dead and another arrested after a shooting in Comanche County on Saturday. The Comanche County Sheriff's Office responded Saturday to the 2900 block of Highway 2921 in the Oliver Springs community of northern Comanche County. It was reported that there were three deceased people at the location, and the caller was admitting to shooting them, a news release from the sheriff's office stated. Upon arrival of De Leon Police Department officers, Texas Department of Public Safety troopers, and the Comanche County Sheriff's Office, the suspect was detained, the crime scenes located and secured. Earl Stevens III, 63, and Ashlyn Smith, 18, were found deceased, and Patricia Stevens, 62, was transported by helicopter to a Fort Worth hospital where she succumbed to her injuries. The sheriff's office extends its thoughts and prayers to the families affected by this appalling event and asks that the communities respect and support them in their time of grief, the release stated. Brendan Jenkins, 22, was arrested on suspicion of capital murder and remained in Comanche County Jail waiting magistration Saturday evening. The sheriff's office and the Texas Ranger Division are working to complete the investigation. Update: Missing San Angelo Teen Found Saturday by Elena Edgen. Jace Wilson was located and is home safe, his mother reported Saturday night. Alicia Carrasco reported her son missing about 7:40 p.m. Wednesday. She thanks everyone who helped find him. Thank you all for allowing the widespread plea for him to come home. Everyone sent in multiple tips that led to his location, she said. Carrasco said she was also grateful to the sheriff's deputies and police officers who assisted with the search. No matter what time of day or night, they were right there searching with me, Carrasco wrote in a Facebook post after her son was home. I seriously cannot thank you enough.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.